A few weeks ago on vision. Talking about vision again today, and vision in a way that motivates us not only as a church together, but vision that also motivates us individually for our own faith and for where we live and for how we express that from day to day and the places that we have, for all of the different ways that we do that, right? For some of us, maybe it's in those years of life where we're retired and we meet with other people and we find other ways now, and we're searching for other ways to be useful in how we can live that out. For some of us, it may be that we're still students in school and we're still learning what it means for us to know God and love God and discover everything about His world and about how He's created us. For some of us, maybe it's just trying to make it through another week of taking care of the kids and making sure everyone gets where they need to go and making sure that I've just got supper in the house tonight for people to eat. Every single one of us is at a different stage of life in some way. But for every single one of us, God gives a vision for how He desires for our faith to work together as Christians in this place. So that's what we've been talking about. We began that by looking at the words that we use in this church to express our mission together, right? Loving and growing and serving. So a couple weeks ago, I talked specifically about love and what it means for us to love as a mission and as a guide together as God's people. Last week, we talked about growing and what it means for us to grow as a mission and a guide for how we live as God's people. And today we're talking about serving. What it means for us to serve. So here's a short story that comes from the Gospel of Luke. Luke chapter 10. It's an exchange that takes place between Jesus and Martha. So Jesus, in this story, Jesus is traveling with his group towards Jerusalem. They stop in the town of Bethany, which is outside of Jerusalem a little ways, and they're invited into the home of Mary and Martha for dinner. So that's the scene that we set here. Okay? This is from Luke 10. Beginning at verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So I picture the scene here, the dinner scene that we see, where Martha is working to get everything ready. I know, I do some work in the kitchen too, right? If you've got a dinner party going on, there are guests coming, special guests coming, the house is filled, you want it to be just right, right? It's that kind of time where you clean parts of your house that maybe you haven't picked up or cleaned in quite a while. Maybe sometimes you need to invite people over just so you have an excuse to do that, to clean like that. You get to sit on the furniture that otherwise mom says don't sit in that couch, right? Don't go in that room. That kind of an event. And so Martha's making all the preparations here. She wants the roast to come out of the oven just right at that perfect moment. And then trying to time all the other potatoes and vegetables to go along with that so that they're all ready at the right time then as well and stay warm. And got to keep stirring the gravy so that you don't get lumps going on in it. And the centerpieces are all set out there. And the cheese board hasn't even gone out yet. The guests are already here. All of those things going on. And Martha's trying to attend to all of these details as they go. And she thinks to herself, "Hey, where's my sister? Where's Mary? She's disappeared." And then she sees her sister Mary sitting in the other room with all the guests listening to Jesus. Now, I don't know, maybe we can speculate here that maybe Martha kind of bumped in and asked Mary politely a few times, "Mary, I could use a hand, please. Mary, when you have a second." Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. Maybe Martha was in the kitchen and just fuming over this, just stewing and letting that build and build. "Here I am doing everything by myself. No one is helping me out a single bit." Whatever happens here, however it occurs, we reach that point in the scene where Martha just blows up, right? She cannot contain it any longer. Martha has frustration here, frustration that produces something, right? What does Martha's frustration produce? In this anxiety and in this moment of just seething over this. You know, I imagine that perhaps for those who hold some kind of social awareness of appropriateness, you would expect then maybe Martha to walk in the room and politely ask something like, "Excuse me, Jesus, if it's not too much trouble, I would very much appreciate if you would pardon my sister Mary that she could come and help me in the kitchen, if it's not too much trouble," right? That would maybe be the more socially acceptable thing to do. But now imagine the scene, right? Here it is that Jesus and the guests are in the room. Jesus is talking. And Martha bursts in there and just yells it out in front of everyone. And it's frustration then. Frustration that's not only focused at Mary, but now she is focusing her frustration and her anger at Jesus himself, right? She addresses Jesus. "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Don't you care?" It's not really a question. The way that the Greek language phrases that means that Martha expects what the answer is, right? And we do that sometimes too. My kids all come up into the kitchen and start getting snack things out and making a mess all over the kitchen. I may ask the question, "You're going to clean that up when you're done, right?" I'm not really asking the question, right? We all do that. "You're going to pick this up later, right?" That's what Martha's doing. "Lord, you care, right? Lord, you are going to intervene and do something about this, right?" Martha's not asking a question of Jesus. She's giving a command, commanding Jesus what she thinks Jesus ought to do in that moment. That's where Martha's frustration has taken her. That's what it looks like in that moment. We've been there. I imagine, maybe it's not a dinner party, but you know what it's like. Every single one of us knows what it's like within our own households, maybe driving in the car, whatever that is. You know what it's like to have that moment where you just can't take anymore, right? The frustration builds and you lose it. You've known it yourself. You've seen it happen in other people. What does your Martha moment look like? Right? What does that look like for you? Maybe some of you don't even have to think back too far. Like, you know what? It was just this morning trying to get ready for church. Maybe some of you have to think back a little further in your week. But you know what? Every single one of us can go back and find that moment, right? No one is exempt from this. Doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are, every single one of us in our lives can identify a Martha moment where we had something that was just too much and I blew my top and I couldn't take it anymore and I exploded that way. What is that for you? What does that look like? You know, because when you think about Martha and what she's doing here, it's not necessarily a bad thing. She's invited people over to her house for dinner. She has to prepare the dinner for them. It's not like she's going off the rails here in some wild direction of evil. No, she has all the best intentions of the world, right? She's doing what she thinks is a good thing to do, inviting people over for dinner and helping and hosting and feeding that. That's not a bad thing. So it's not that there's malicious intent going on here, but the arrangements get to be too much in the busyness of the moment of everything that happens. Sure, I could make lists like that too, right? I could come up with those same kinds of excuses. I mean, after all, this can be a busy place here. Let's say I had to write a sermon this week, I had calls to make, a visit to arrange and follow up on, an agenda prepare for a committee meeting that's coming, and all of those people who arrange for that. All of those things, and then the emails. The emails just never stop. Right? There's always something going on in the inbox. We all have that. Every single one of us has moments like that that adapt to our own life in our own way. So what do we do? How do we respond like that when we find those moments where it seems like all of the details and the busyness and everything that needs to get done take over? And they take over in such a way where I'm having trouble coping with all this now and figuring out how I'm supposed to be the servant that God has called me to be in moments like that. Right? Because that's what we're talking about here, is serving, that we want to be people who serve God and serve others. But what do I do in those moments where life feels so overwhelming that I'm not sure how to juggle all that? And instead of being this beautiful picture of serving other people the way that in my mind I desire it to be, it ends up being a frustrating tantrum where I explode at everyone around me. How does that happen? How does it come to that? Right? How do we reach those moments where we say, God, don't you care? Don't you care? Don't you care that I've got all these things that I have to prepare and do by myself? Don't you care that I care for kids in a single parent home? Don't you care that my health is failing and I'm losing my mobility and my freedom to get around anymore? Don't you care that my business is struggling and going under and I'm having trouble making ends meet and I have to keep working while friends around me are able to retire? Don't you care about the abuse and neglect that I've faced in my own life and the struggle to climb out of that? We all have our reasons. We all can make our excuses. We all have our times when we can come before God, I think just like Martha, not really asking the question, but making the demand. God, you need to intervene. You need to tell someone to help me. You need to make this better because I'm having trouble working all this out on my own. We've all had that. We've all had those moments where maybe you think, I can't handle another, right? I can't handle another detail. I can't handle another responsibility. I can't handle one more thing to do. So what do we do? What do we do in that? I think what Martha needed in this moment was some margin. Now, you know what margin is. Margins are those blank spaces around the edge of a piece of paper, right? The space where if you have an assignment to do, when I would write papers for college back then, I would have to leave certain margins around the edge of that paper because when you turn that assignment in, the professor would grade it and write comments in on those spaces, and there would have to be those empty spaces there in order for the professor to mark that up and send it back. You'd have to leave some empty space around the edges for that. Martha needed some margin. Margin in her calendar. Margin in her life. That Martha was so busy and so jam-packed at that moment that there was no room for anything else. Until she just blows up. Some of us know what that's like too, right? Booked, overworked, constantly trying to fit one thing in after another thing, after another thing. And then the opportunity comes along to serve. And it may be a great opportunity. And I may have all the best intentions in the world. And I may actually want to do that and say, yes, I want to serve. I want to help in that way. But somehow now I've got to shoehorn that event into my calendar, shuffle it into the deck, and make that fit somewhere along the way between this thing and that thing and that thing. And so when it actually comes time to produce whatever it is that I need to serve there, that I'm struggling just to make all the ends meet and put it together. We live in a world today where we have lost some of our own margin, right? In our own busyness, in our own stresses of where we go from day to day and how much we try to cram and fit in there. Martha needed some margin to make this work. And we need to admit, right, in our Martha moments, where it seems like I have more than I can handle and more than I can take, a moment to back off and admit, I need some margin. I need a little bit more margin in my life so that when opportunities come, where God lays something before me, where I can be of service, that I've got space for that, to make that happen. So how does that go forward? How does that go forward in this exchange, right? So we left the scene there. Martha bursts into the room, gives this command to Jesus, don't you care? You care, right? You're supposed to intervene here. Tell her to help me. Tell Mary to come give me a hand. How does Jesus respond then? What is his answer? He says her name twice. You know, I think when I've read that, I've always read that or heard that in the past as something of empathy, right? Martha, Martha. Now, I think as I read this passage over and over and over again, I see an overlap in the conversation. Martha isn't even done with her tantrum. I'm doing all this work by myself. I'm busy. I can't. And Jesus almost has to interrupt. Martha, Martha, slow down. Hang on a second. Pay attention, right? And then he responds to her. You are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. So what did Mary choose, right? What is it that Mary chose in this moment that Jesus is pointing to? That maybe is something we can pull out of this as well. Mary in this moment has chosen to be where the people are, right? To be in a place where the people are. Martha, on the other hand, in this moment, is busy working about a project. Between the people and the project. Now, I had said before that, you know, I don't think Martha had malicious intent here. I don't think it's that Jesus is coming into this moment and saying, you know what, dinner is a bad thing. No, but he's trying to set something of a priority out of this. A priority to what comes first. What's more important when we think about serving and what it means for us as God's people to be in service to God and in service to others? There's something that we see about this. Jesus says, you're worried, you're upset, you're stressing, you're anxious about all these things, about many things. And then he funnels it down a little bit. But only a few things are needed. And then he funnels it down even further. In fact, indeed, only one thing. What is that one thing? Right? What is that one thing that Jesus is trying to take Martha from this place of worrying about all of these details and instead saying, you know what? Focus on one. Mary here has chosen one. And it's not necessarily that the dinner was the bad thing and sitting Jesus was the good thing, but it's about the priority of the relationship, right? The priority of the relationship. That in all of the preparations, maybe Martha forgot the reason why all of this mattered in the first place. About the relationships of the people that were there to be served. See, Martha had a paradigm for understanding this. A paradigm for Martha that when something like this, her paradigm of serving said that the project matters most and the people are resources to make the project happen, right? So whatever the project or the program is, that's the main thing. And any of the people that are there, well, they're just there to make the project happen in whatever way. Project is king, and people are subordinate underneath that. That seems to be what Martha is operating with at this moment. You know, one of the things that I appreciate about, well, of the many things I appreciate of this church, I appreciate that there's a committee here called the Personnel Committee, right, that handles staff and staffing issues and everything that we have with staff. I appreciate that they call it personnel because I don't hear that very often anymore, right? In businesses today, there's not a personnel department anymore. Now it's all changed. Now they call it human resources. And there's part of me as a person of God who knows that God creates human beings with value and worth that rubs against that and says, you know what? Human beings are not resources. They're people. I like personnel because it states something differently. It operates on a little bit of a different paradigm that you are a person, not a resource. Martha here is looking at the project that she has of this dinner that needs to be prepared, and she is looking at Mary as a resource. I need her help to do this. This is the important thing, and I need human resources to accomplish it. That's the paradigm operating there. And sometimes we think of that when we think of what it means for us to serve. We think of all these projects that we need to do, and we think of the programs that need to happen. We think of all the places that we plug in, and we may have the best of intentions, and they may be great programs, and they may be awesome projects. That's not bad stuff. But when we think of that project in a way where all of a sudden the people become the resources to make that happen, then we lose something there. I think that's what Jesus is pointing us back to on this, right? He's focusing us on a different kind of paradigm, a paradigm shift, that says people matter most and projects connect and nurture relationships, right? The projects or the programs or all the things that we do, which are our acts of service, are there to facilitate and cultivate and nurture the relationships, the people that God has called us to in love. Because nobody wants to be treated as a project. Nobody. You know, we have a call center in here with a food bank, and it's open a couple days a week, and people come in here, and I think one of the highest priorities for our people who staff that is make sure when those people walk in that they know that they're people, right? That you don't walk in and say, all right, what do I need to do for you today? You're not my project today, but you are a person. Nobody wants to be treated as a project. Nobody. I know I don't. And I imagine the same thing is true for you as well. Even though we all have needs and we all go to other people with needs from time to time, the thing that makes it feel so good is when I know that I'm received and loved as a person for who I am, not just somebody's problem to fix. I think that's what Jesus is pointing us back to. I think that's what this story illustrates for us, that in our moments of serving where it's our turn to do the dinner party, right? It's our turn to host and put this whole thing together, that we keep that part straight. That the people are what matter most when we do that. So how does this translate into something for us, right? That nobody wants to be treated as a project. How does that give us a vision for serving and what serving looks like? What does that vision look like? Couple of checkpoints, okay? Couple of checkpoints that maybe can help us measure where we are in that and how we can do that better in this story and how that demonstrates for us. First checkpoint is this, a checkpoint. Create some margin. Maybe that's where I need to begin. However that looks. We all have different lives and our lives are all busy in different ways, and that may look different for every single one of us. But what do I need to do in my life to make some space, to create some margin? I need to intentionally choose to do that in order for me to be a servant of God. I need the space, I need the margin to do it. You know, years ago, before I had any kids, when Laura and I first got married, we were volunteer youth leaders. And it seems like every year we had opportunities with our youth group to do some kind of a mission trip, some kind of an experience. And I had a job at the time which offered me several weeks of vacation. But what it meant was if we were going to take that opportunity to be a part of that youth group and do that mission trip, one of my vacation weeks had to go to that. And that was all right. And I would not trade that for the world looking back at it now. The places that we went to and experiences that we had and relationships with those students that we were able to cultivate and nurture and be a part of, I wouldn't trade that for anything. It took a week of vacation, though. I had to make the margin in my space to do it. You know what? I didn't give all of my vacation to it. No. I still had some time just to refresh and rest myself. But there was a piece, a margin. A margin that I intentionally chose that I would give for this. Because otherwise, without the margin, that opportunity to serve in that way wouldn't happen. What is it for you? Right? Where is that space in your life where you can create some margin? Make a choice to intentionally put some margin back in there so that when the opportunity to serve comes around, you have the space for it. and don't have to try to cram it in and around it on top of in something where it becomes a stressful list of details. But I've got the space, I've got the room, I've made the time for this to fit in my life. That's your first checkpoint. Make some margin. Where is that margin? Now, the second thing is this, to put people before projects. How do we do that? What does that look like? To continually remember and remind myself, anytime I bump into somebody new, to have that thought go through my head, nobody wants to be treated like a project. Nobody wants to be treated like a problem to be fixed. How do I remind myself of that over and over again? What do I have to do that? You know, from time to time, I need some things in my home that are maybe a project to fix, right? And I need hardware, so I'll go out and find something from the hardware store. If it's something where I'm not quite sure what I'm after, I know I'm going to need some help, I don't know what the fix is, more times than not, I will choose a place like Ace Hardware Store. Because when I go into Ace Hardware Store, this has been my experience anyway, there's somebody by the door who's, hey, what can I help you with today? I explain, here's what I'm working on. I'm not quite sure what I need. Come on, I got you. Let's go. Well, take me back to wherever it is. Show me the options of what's there. Here's what you need for this or this. Explain to me again your project. What do you need to fix that? Here's how you would use this, and here's how this works, and gets me going. Here's the other thing, though. Ace Hardware, it's, you know, I think it's a little more expensive. I pay a little bit more. Because there are some cheaper places out there. I could go to Menards, I could go to Home Depot, and I know what it's like. I walk into Home Depot, and you know what? There's a guy at the door there too. Hey, what do you need today? I say, yeah, I think I need something like this. And the answer is, it's in aisle 175. Go. Good luck. You're on your own. That's been my experience anyway. So I find myself at a place where I'm willing to pay a little bit more to go to somewhere where, you know what, the customer, the person, takes a higher priority over just shuffling through the project. That it matters. There's a connection with the person there that matters. It takes a little bit of time, and it costs a little something extra. But it's worth it to take that time and pay a little something extra of my own time, my own ability, my own resources, to connect with people so that they don't end up becoming a project. Jesus did this, right? I think Jesus knew how this worked. Jesus, on one occasion, he's traveling and he comes to a town where he meets a man named Jairus, who's one of the rulers there. And Jairus has a daughter who's sick. And so Jairus begs him, come to my house and heal my daughter. Jesus creates some margin. He adjusts his schedule. Yep, I'll go. Let's go. And so they're on their way to Jairus' house. And as they're going in the crowd of people there, there's this woman. A woman who's subjected to this problem of chronic bleeding that won't go away. And she sneaks her way through the crowd without anyone seeing, finds her way up to Jesus and just reaches out and touches him. Trying to do that without getting any attention, just touches him. And she's healed instantly. And Jesus stops. Stops everything. Turns around. Who did that? Who touched me? He takes a moment there and he creates another space of margin in that moment to focus on a relationship with this woman. And then interacts with her and sends her away, healed and blessed. Then turns his attention back to Jairus and continues on to his house and performs a miracle there in front of his whole family. Jesus creates the margin. He demonstrates that in how he worked with people. Creates margin not just to get the project done. I mean, after all, the woman was healed. She could have just gone on her way. After all, Jesus could have just snapped his fingers, your daughter's fine. But no, creates the margin for the relationship to happen. Right? Creates the margin because it wasn't just about fixing somebody's problem, it was about connecting with a person. That's what Jesus did. That's what he demonstrates. On another occasion, Jesus is traveling through Samaria and he comes to a spot where he's sitting by this well and a woman comes along and he's thirsty and he says, hey, could I have a drink? Now, I suppose it would have been well and good enough. Thank you for your hospitality. I enjoyed the drink. On your way. But instead, it turns into this interaction where Jesus and this woman end up talking and kind of spills out her entire life story in front of him. And he takes the day with her then. And the entire village then is invited and surrounded by Jesus. That would have just been, you know what, I need a drink, turns into an encounter with a relationship. Jesus demonstrates that over and over again. Maybe one of the most well-known Bible verses that are out there, right? If you ever go to a football game or see football on TV, you see people hold up their signs with Bible verses on it. John 3:16, right? Maybe one of the most well-known ones. God so loved the world that he gave his only son. We've heard that one. I think many of us have heard that one over and over and over again to the point where, yep, I know it, I heard it, I got that. But it really is remarkable. God so loved the world that he gave his son. As opposed to God fixed the world by sending his son. That's not what it says. It wasn't the project there just to fix the world. But it was because God loves the world. He loves us. You see, when it comes down to it, you and I, we are not God's project. We are his people. You know what I know? I know that I am a sinner who needs salvation. I know that I have sinned and I need to be saved. But that's not the way God comes to me. He comes to me as a person who needs to be loved. Yes, I am a sinner. Yes, I am saved by Jesus. But he comes to me as a person. That's who our God is. We are not his project. We are his people. That's how he came to serve us. And that's the reason why we are called to serve the way that we do. Let's pray together. God, thank you for the gift of your word. Thank you for the way we read even in just this short story of how you have shown and demonstrated your love for us and how we can serve others. God, we need to confess that we've all had our moments just like Martha, that we've burst out in the moment of frustration of needing to handle all the details and all the projects, and we have forgotten that other people around us are people created by you, loved by you. We confess that there's time when we look at the people around us and we just see resources, things that need to get done and people that need to do it. Forgive us, God. Turn us back again to remember that because we are not your project, but your people, that also we serve a world not full of projects, but full of people to be called and loved. Help us to do that well. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. Would you please say?